previously on Movie Fighters.
So, Chris, the Pony Girls...
Don't call them Pony Girls.
Chris, I don't understand how this fucking world works.
Matt, I don't know what to do!
Take the shot!
And now, Movie Fighters.
Sucker, this is Movie Fighters, the show where I, Matt Wilson, and Chris Sims, we watch movies and beat them up. And by popular request, and because we are, I don't know, cursed to do this forever, we are taking our November episode of Movie Fighters to watch the fourth installment of the My Little Pony Equestria Girls series of films, My Little Pony Equestria Girls, Legend of Everfree.
Or as I have called it in my notes for this show, Equestria Girls 4, Oblivion.
Which could be a Phantasm reference, or could be an Elder Scrolls reference.
It was a Phantasm reference, Matt. I'm actually really excited for Equestria Girls 5, Ravager.
Yes.
Coming up soon.
Let's do a rundown of the previous Equestria Girls films. The first one was just My Little Pony Equestria Girls.
That takes place in an alternate universe of My Little Pony Friendship is Magic that they can access through a magic mirror, but instead of being horses, they're all human teenagers who, instead of living in a kingdom, go to a high school. It's a high school AU that happens to be in continuity with the main series.
The difference is, and we've talked about this at length, the world of Equestria, where the ponies live, is a large world with different lands and places with different names, and they're are different organizational structures.
Multiple cities.
Yes.
Local and national governments in place.
The world of the Equestria Girls, Canterlot High, is a high school and a vague town around it. But really, everything in the world revolves around this high school. And it's apparently the only place in the entire world.
Yes. I think it's like, I were we like two or three movies in before we saw someone's house?
And we've never seen anyone's parents, to my knowledge.
Yeah. We see a sister at one point, but never any parents.
I remember that there was a scene in Pinkie Pie's house.
Yeah. They have a sleepover at Pinkie Pie's house, and that's where we see her sister.
It was Applejack's house. And we see her house. But no parents. She apparently lives alone. But, all right. So the first one is just establishing the world. The plot involves Sunset Shimmer having come to this world as well. And then she turns
into... Because when the horses go through the magic portal, they turn into humans.
That's right. Also, everyone's skin is the color that they are as a pony. So they're like... Yes. Orange and blue and pink people.
Which is a very neat sidestep of asking what they would look like if they were, like, for real humans.
Yeah.
And how much racial diversity would be in the cast.
What actual race Twilight Sparkle would be. So that's the first movie. That ends with Sunset Shimmer turning into an actual demon.
Mm-hmm. A Satan.
A Satan. And the group having to defeat her. The second movie...
Oh, but no, well, then they forgive her and she becomes part of the crew.
The second movie is a Battle of the Bands movie.
That would be Rainbow. My Little Pony, Friendship is Magic, Equestria Girls, Rainbow Rocks.
Yes, that is the full title. And that one is really kind of just a straight up Battle of the Bands thing. They take on an evil band. I think they end up winning the Battle of the Bands. Look, a lot of this is lost to my memory.
Yeah, you know what? I assumed they win the Battle of the Bands, but I could not, like, tell you. I do not remember that happening. I'm just, like, of course they win, right? Of course.
But it doesn't really matter. You can go back and listen to that episode.
It does not matter. And they're also demons, if memory serves.
Now, the third one is Equestria Girls Friendship Games, which is about a three-part athletic competition in the school. That one has parallels to the first one. That one ends also with somebody turning into a Satan.
Yes.
But it's not Sunset Shimmer anymore who's turning into a Satan. I think it's isn't it an evil Twilight Sparkle?
No, I don't think Twilight Sparkle turns into... Okay, because when in the first movie, when Twilight Sparkle comes to Canterlot High, it's the pony Twilight Sparkle masquerading as a human. But there is a real human Twilight Sparkle in that universe who then shows up later because she's going to a different school that they're playing against in the friendship games. I don't think she turns into a Satan. I think it's the other... Matt, I gotta say, I remember zero things about the friendship games. I only remember that it was frustrating and that we had a long conversation about whether they teach archery in high school.
They never declared a winner. And that's bullshit.
You're sounding real North Carolina over there.
We're going to get to my snack situation in a second. I don't want it to get cold. I'm sorry, everybody.
All of which is to say, we have watched all three of these movies. None of them have answered our questions.
And each one just adds
more questions.
We've forgotten many important plot elements.
Important plot elements.
We just remember snippets and bits.
We've not only watched these movies, we've taken notes and discussed them at length.
Yeah,
and yet I cannot remember a thing about these.
I don't know if they're made to be remembered. Also, hilarious horse joke when I said bits, and that just went by. Anyway, the new one is called Legend of Everfree, and okay, this one might answer some of our questions, or at least one of them, because it does take place somewhere that is not the high school.
Okay,
it takes place at a summer camp.
I assume this is just a shot-for-shot remake of Wet Hot American Summer.
What if it's
with Twilight Sparkle in the Paul Rudd role?
What if it's a shot-for-shot remake of Sleepaway Camp?
Okay, so here's a couple things about this. One, we have been told that this movie is going to blow up everything we think we know about the Equestria Girls universe, which is shocking, because we think we know very little.
Yeah, we're still so confused about it in every way. So, honestly, I welcome any information that I can get.
The second thing, and this has to do with my watching of the series, which I don't believe you have watched any of. The actual Friendship is Magic series.
I've watched an episode or two.
One of the things that I really like about it is how it does some really interesting and actually kind of subtle world building. One of the things that is true in the world of Equestria Girls, or in the world of Friendship is Magic, is that the weather is entirely controlled by the ponies. It's the Pegasi are in charge of controlling the weather. They can stomp on clouds to make rain come out. They can move clouds around. But that's only true in Equestria itself, in the land ruled over by the Pharaonic God Queen, Princess Celestia. There's a place called the Everfree Forest that is mentioned several times. It's the site of several episodes where they talk about how weird it is because all the weather just happens. So it is more analogous to the way that we would think of like weather patterns and forests in our world. Like, it's an untamed, unmastered, but still magical domain. That's actually something that I thought was pretty cool back in the first season, where they seeded that really well. I don't know how that's going to translate to a summer camp.
One thing of note that I think is very important and very good, one thing I like about most of these Equestria Girls movies is that they are short. This one is 1 hour and 13 minutes.
It's the thing it's got going for it.
Yeah, so we're going to watch My Little Pony, The Legend of Everfree. This was released on Netflix on October 1st. So we're not so far behind on it. We're watching it a little over a month after it came out. So, you know, we responded to everyone's request that we watch this movie in a timely fashion. If you would like to watch along with us, you can go on Netflix. All four My Little Pony Equestria Girls movies are available on Netflix. If you would like to try to figure this shit out with us. Before we get to the movie, though, Chris, obviously, we've got to do the hottest segment in podcasting, Snack Situation.
You'll have to fight with something to eat, sometimes it's savory, sometimes it's sweet. Snack Situation, what you snacking on?
Chris, what are you snacking on over there?
Well, Matt, it is, as we are recording this, it is November. It is pre-Thanksgiving times, but it is November, and that means that Christmas-themed foodstuffs are now widely available.
This is true.
And that means that I am going reindeer wild on some Christmas-themed foodstuffs. I actually purchased a box of white fudge-covered Oreos, intending for those to be my snack situation. Unfortunately, someone who lives in this apartment with me decided to eat all of them last night. I maybe had two, but someone who is not me, who lives here with me, ate them all. But we have a problem. Snack situation is out of control. I think you'll agree with that.
I mean, it's taken on a life of its own.
Because people will send us snacks, and because people will send us, like, boxes of snacks from foreign countries, and because we only do this show formerly biweekly and now monthly, on a monthly basis, like, snack situation kind of became meal situation for a little bit.
That's a preview for mine.
I am not complaining about that. I'm not complaining about any of the amazing gifts of snacks people have sent to us. But if you send us a box of snacks, we have to eat them all. So, Matt, you and I were eating, like 15 kinds of snacks over the course of a movie. And that's just too much. So I have gone classic. If you hear that, that is a bag of shimmery white chocolate M&Ms. They are one of the many Christmas flavors of M&Ms. I don't like peppermint, so I got these. These do have the sexy green M&M on the package, which I am not comfortable with. But I'm excited. I've never had glittery white chocolate M&Ms before. But that's a classic movie snack. That is a snack for a snack situation.
You know, the green M&M can be who she is. You don't have to. Don't shame her.
I'm not shaming the green M&M. I'm shaming the advertising company that was like, hey, we have these funny anthropomorphic M&Ms, but we don't have one that people want to, like, smooch up on.
We don't have one
Could
that
we
wears.
Can we maybe fix that?
We don't have one that wears, like, sexy stockings.
Matt, they're go-go boots. You are adding, like, I had to correct you because you are adding, like, a level of perversion that the green M&M does not reach.
I was
and that's on you.
I was fan-arting the green M&M.
Let me just type in, you know, what's your snack situation, Matt? I'm going to type in green M&M into Google Image Search.
Okay.
Real quick.
So, rarely do we record an episode of Movie Fighters in the morning time, in the brunching hour. But we're doing that this week.
Oh, this was a mistake. Matt, there is a lot of, like, official art of the green M&M, like, unzipping her candy shell.
Not fan-generated art, like...
No, I mean, the fan-generated art is bad. the fan-generated art is very bad.
From the Mars company, she's taking off her green shell.
Yeah, like, they're like, oh, and here's one where she's, like, got the shell completely off, and she's, like, kneeling on a beach. Like, apparently, like, was the green M&M in the Sports Illustrated Swimsuit Edition? That's what I'm finding out right now. This is so upsetting.
Maybe it was, like, a parody of the Swimsuit Edition. It couldn't have been in the real magazine. I'll close this tab. Close this tab, Chris.
Hang on, I just sent you a link. It's not this. Click on that link real quick.
Jesus Christ. Okay, so it's an image of the green M&M with her shell totally off. And so she's just a chocolate tab in, like, a lake? Like a misty lake.
It's like a hot spring. She's at, like, a hot spring.
But her shell is not a hard shell. It looks like a towel or a dress with an M on it. This is not good. I'm sorry that we talked about this. Can I go back to my snack situation?
You can do whatever you want, Matt. But that lives in your head now.
You're right. Okay, so we rarely do... What do I even say now? We rarely do snack situation or movie fighters in the morning time, in the brunching hour. So I decided I would have something breakfasty for my snack situation. Also because I wanted to eat breakfast. So I made some sausage biscuits at home, made them myself, and so I have some sausage biscuits in front of me, and I'm eating those.
Now, did you scratch make those biscuits, my man?
Oh, definitely not. These are some Pillsbury boys, some Grands.
I'll tell you what. It's the Mrs. B's are the best store bought biscuits. That's a hot tip for you.
Okay.
Next time you Mrs. B's drop biscuits. Next time you hit the store, check out Mrs. B's. What kind of sausage are you working with there?
I think it's the Bob Evans sausage. It could be a little spicier, but it's not bad.
Yeah. See, that's like my thing is that usually sometimes I get the mild sausage because I'm like, I don't want to start my day off with heartburn, you know. But then I'm eating it and I'm like, this could be spicier. Like this could always have. I should have gotten that Tennessee Pride spicy sausage.
So often I'll get the like brick of sausage, the like kind of cylindrical brick of sausage, but I didn't want to deal with it, so I bought the pre-patted sausage. Mm. It's usually a mistake. The brick sausage is usually better, but this is not bad. It will do for my breakfast this morning.
Look, there is no shame in having a slightly more convenient breakfast when you've got My Little Pony Legend of Everfree to watch. Hey, do you remember when we saw the green M&M, but she didn't have her candy shell on and she was in a lake?
So we're going to watch The Legend of Everfree. As I said, you can watch along with us on Netflix. We're going to hit pause. You're going to hear an ad and then some music. If you would like to take a break and watch the movie along with us, you may. Either way, we're going to be back right after that musical interlude to talk about My Little Pony Equestria Girls, Legend of Everfree. And we are back from watching Equestria Girls, Legend of Everfree. And as we said before we started watching the movie, the people who asked us to watch this movie told us that we were going to be blown away by it for various reasons. The biggest surprise of all is that we were blown away by this movie because it was actually good.
I am ready to talk about this very good movie. First, do you have any any additional reporting about our snack situation? How those biscuits go down?
They're pretty good. By the time I finished them, they had gotten cold because they were sitting here for a few minutes before I was able to eat them. But they were not bad. How about those M&Ms?
That's the problem with hot snacks, man. We gotta talk about them for 15 minutes.
You're right.
The M&Ms are very good. These are the glittery white chocolate ones. I enjoy white chocolate. They're very good. They are not as good as they would have been had I not had to think about certain things every time I got a handful.
Sure.
But, you know, that's on me. That is my problem.
Certain images we saw on the internet.
Yeah. And look, you didn't even see the fan art.
Yeah.
Okay. I only sent you the official art, which in some ways is worse.
I'm good. I'm more than good on that. Okay.
I'm going to send you a link real quick.
Please don't. Let's talk about Equestria Girls, Legend of Everfree.
First of all, I'm going to say 10 out of 10 for Legend of Everfree.
So what we were told is that this was going to answer some questions that we had about the Equestria Girls universe.
It did not.
What it did more of was answer questions we didn't have. It presented questions that we didn't know we had and then answered them. Namely, the question was, where does the magic in the Equestria Girls world come from? Because on multiple occasions throughout the movie, the magic is referred to as quote-unquote equestrian magic.
Which is weird because equestrian is a word.
Uh-huh.
And nobody ever goes, you mean like horse magic? Is that what you're talking about? Because that word means of or relating to horses.
That's right. But it led us to get into a conversation that was like, them calling it equestrian magic makes it seem like this world would just be a world of people, much like our own,
mm-hmm.
that was magicless, unless there was a breach between this world and the world of My Little Pony.
Yeah, Equestria. Because here's the problem with Equestria Girls, is that their universe does not have a proper name. So they are the Equestria Girls, but they are not the Girls of Equestria. Equestria being the horse-based universe on the other side of the magic portal.
They're just Earth human. Or Equestria human. I don't... Ugh, it's confusing. But...
Yeah.
It seems like an answered question throughout the movie because it is definitively called Equestrian magic.
Specifically, Sunset calls it Equestrian magic,
Sunset,
which is important to remember.
From Equestria.
Yeah, Sunset was a horse for most of her life.
In the first movie, she was a murderer. Do you remember that?
I do. I remember. That's a thing I remember about it.
But she has been forgiven for her murders, and she is more or less the hero of this movie. She definitively refers to it as equestrian magic. Then, at the end of the movie, it becomes a question. And then the answer is revealed that, yes, there is magic in this human world, because of the breach with Equestria.
Because the portal is unstable. Because it was, at one point, it was like, this portal is open for 3 days every 3 months, right? It was like a Mix's Pitlick situation, if I remember correctly.
There was a limited amount of time that you could use the portal.
But now there's just like, apparently, like, there's that magic mirror that's in the base of the pedestal outside the school. But now there's just like a crack in the top and shit's getting loose. Much like the short-lived comic by Mark Waid and Amanda Connor, Gatecrasher. This some of you might remember from when Garib Sheamus tried to launch a comic book company called Black Bull.
Let's just dive into talking about the plot of Equestria Girls, Legend of Everfree.
The plot, there's a couple of questions that I want to talk about, because we have had so many questions about this universe. So here is what is answered by Legend of Everfree. There is a world outside of Canterlot High and its associated rival school. There's a world outside that town. We see, like, sweeping vistas. They have to travel on a highway to get to this camp. It is out of the city. There are other cars. There is at least the implication of a much larger world than we are presented in three films.
It's not that much larger.
There's at least a forest. There's at least a forest they have to travel to.
And there are mountains. At one point later in the movie, all the girls get powers.
Mm-hmm.
Or they keep referring to it as their magic, but they get superpowers. And Rainbow Dash's superpower, appropriately, is super speed. She accidentally takes off running and loses track of where she is. And the way that she describes it is that she almost went all the way back to town, as if that is the only other place she could have gone.
But they don't say which town, though. They don't say, like, if there's a town near the camp or back to Canterlot High.
Well, I think the implication is that there is only one town.
There's a lot of implications, and that's the other thing that I want to get to. At one point, Sunset Shimmer is startled awake. Upon waking, she immediately strikes, like, karate poses. And yes. I wrote down that that implies the existence of Asia, but it actually just implies the existence of Asia in Equestria. like a pony equivalent of Asia. Maybe there are no martial arts in this world. There are only martial arts that come from horse world.
It may be a stretch to say it implies that Asia exists. It implies that martial arts exist. It
implies that martial arts exist, but specifically it's open-handed martial arts.
There's which also
is interesting because the ponies do not have fingers. They would by definition have, like, I guess, like fist-shaped martial arts.
Well, I mean, yeah, they have hooves.
Yes.
But there's also a mention early on in the movie of Latin. Specifically,
yes,
the Latin word for blue, which is the basis of the word sapphire.
The human world Twilight Sparkle, the pony world Twilight Sparkle is not in this movie. She is mentioned once.
Yeah.
In a very, what I would say is an excellent, funny scene. But there is a discussion between human Twilight Sparkle and Timber, who is one of the camp counselors, about the Latin root of a word. They actually have a further discussion about Latin root words later in the film. So that implies the existence of Latin. That also implies the existence of Latin in a similar context that it exists in our world as the language of science and the source of a lot of root words. That, in turn, implies the existence of a Roman Empire.
Or at least a culture, a dead culture that spoke Latin.
I think it's safe to say there's a Roman Empire. I think my further extrapolation that this implies the existence of Jesus Christ in the human world, that's shakier territory.
Okay, but there is a direct reference to Jesus Christ in the movie. There is nothing else that this can be.
There's not a direct reference to Jesus Christ. Let's not set people up that much. This isn't Surviving
Twilight
Christmas.
Twilight Sparkle rolls a stone away from the front of a tomb.
It's a cave. She's not in there for 3 days. Everybody out there listening, do not worry. They do not crucify Twilight Sparkle at any point in this movie.
It's a big round stone. In front of a cave, yes, but like every time I've ever seen, like, you know, Jesus's tomb painted, it looks exactly like that.
Oh, no, it does look exactly like the Easter story, and the stone is moved through superhuman powers.
I'm just saying
that no mortal man could have moved that stone.
As we were watching it, and the stone like is being rolled away, I was like, 3 days later, Twilight Sparkle did rise. And removed the stone. Here's another question answered.
Okay, hit me.
There's the legend of Everfree,
mm-hmm.
From the title.
Yes.
Is a legend about a spirit of the forest
mm-hmm.
called Gaia Everfree.
Yes.
And Gaia Everfree, according to Timber, let's explain who Timber is. Timber and his sister, Gloriosa.
Yeah. By the way, Gloriosa Daisy is her full name. Shout out to this My Little Pony movie from 2016 for having a character whose name is basically Furiosa.
Here's a question. Before we get to this, though, Chris, I got a question for you. So Gloriosa's name is Gloriosa Daisy.
Mm-hmm.
Timber's name is Timber Spruce.
Right.
They're brother and sister.
Right.
They don't have the same last name.
Yes.
Is that common naming convention?
Well, names in the world of My Little Pony Friendship is Magic are unique personal names, and they are descriptive names. For instance, Applejack has her grandmother, whose name is Granny Smith. Presumably that was her name for her entire life, which is weird, but that is a variety of apple that she harvests. Applejack also has a brother whose name is Big McIntosh. Applejack's name is never given as, like, Applejack McIntosh or Applejack Smith. We do, however, also know that Pinkie Pie's full name is Pinkamina Diane Pie. So she has a first, middle, and last name and a larger family. No, I'm not kidding. I wish I was, and there's a part of me that wishes I didn't know this.
And she has a name that is a person name.
Yes, she has Diane as her middle name.
But at least, like, Applejack's family, their names are of a theme.
Mm-hmm.
Gloriosa Daisy and Timber Spruce, not really connected at all.
Plant. They're foresty things.
I mean, that's a stretch. Okay, anyway.
I don't think that's a stretch.
Okay.
By the way, Gloriosa, if you type it in to Google, completes to Gloriosa Daisy. And then it also completes to Gloriosa Fick.
Okay.
So, it is a genus of 12 species of plant that are lilies. So her name is basically Lily Daisy, and his name is basically Spruce Tree.
Her name is Flower Flower, and he's Tree Tree. Anyway, their brother and sister, they co-own Camp Everfree. Mm-hmm. We discover later, when Timber is telling a story around the campfire, that camp was founded by their great-grandparents, which confirms that there are parents, grandparents, and great-grandparents in the world of Equestria Girls. But this is the only time we've ever seen the like parents or grandparents or great-grandparents mentioned. And they are only in this flashback. Like, we don't see Gloriosa or Timber's parents here. Mm-hmm. In fact, they have full control of the camp, which means their parents are dead.
And this will be important later. Their ages are never established, but they have very adult concerns.
Financial concerns.
They have, like, mortgage concerns, which is not a thing that teens generally have. I'm willing to accept that Gloriosa is the older sister and that Timber is younger, and that the loss of their parents, however that happened, made them have to have adult responsibilities at a young age. The movie never deals with that, and you will find out why that is important later.
Anyway, Timber tells the story of Gaia Everfree, this spirit of the forest, who threatens his great-grandparents, basically. Mm-hmm. And essentially, the idea is that she doesn't want this camp to be out here in her nature, but she'll allow it for now and then return later to fuck everything up for everybody. So that's where we're going into this. Concurrently, the movie kicks off with a dream sequence where Twilight Sparkle is dreaming that she oversleeps for her bus to go to the camp, and all her friends show up and tell her, hey, we gotta go. You overslept. We gotta get on the bus. It's 6:05, and the bus leaves at 6:30. So they're rushing Twilight Sparkle around to get her to go on time. As this is happening, she envisions herself, and I was right about this. I remembered this correctly.
You did. I was wrong. I swear I did not remember this at all until it came up.
She envisions herself turning back into the actual Satan that she turned into at the end of the third movie, Midnight Sparkle. Because here's the theme of all these movies. Magic, if you overdose on it, will fuck you up.
Yeah, it's basically like season 5 of Buffy. Like whatever the Dark Willow season was, that's literally what every Equestria Girls movie is.
Like, magic is a drug that you can become addicted to, and if you take too much of it or indulge in it too much, it turns you into a literal Satan. That is the through line of all these Equestria Girls movies.
Except for the magic of friendship, which is a positive thing.
Correct. So Twilight is worried about this happening. She wakes up from this dream on the bus already going to the camp. And she's basically like having like post-traumatic stress about having turned into a Satan and attacked her friends. And this goes throughout the movie, or up until a certain point in the movie when she decides to accept it. But throughout the movie, she is literally constantly terrified that she's going to turn back into this Satan and that she's causing all this bad stuff that's happening.
And specifically, because she's going to hurt her friends.
Yeah, because once they get to the camp, these weird things start happening. Like, some of the campers run a boat into a dock and destroy it. And other campers start realizing that they have weird powers. And we have two explanations for that. One is that Gaia Everfree might exist. And two is that Twilight Sparkle thinks she is literally causing it all because of this magic that's inside her. There, to the point where at one point I had to say, like, geez, Twilight Sparkle, not everything is about you. But there's one part where after everyone is assigned a tent to go stay in, which brings up the whole Sapphire conversation, because all the tents are named after different gems.
Yes.
Twilight and Sunset are in the same tent, and Sunset notices that Twilight suddenly has telekinetic powers, so she's making stuff inside the tent float. And Sunset's reaction to this is to go like, that's super cool. It's really cool that you can do this. And Twilight's response to that is to go, no, this is terrifying. I hate that I'm doing this.
Yeah, which I will say is a nice bit of character through line that reminds you that Sunset is from a world that operates on magical laws, and Twilight is from a world that doesn't.
This version of Twilight.
This version of Twilight is from a world of science, theoretically. Because here's the weird thing about the Equestria Girls universe. Like, magic is meant to be a weird thing in this universe. It's meant to be an unknown quantity. But everyone in the school has literally seen people become Satans, and then seen other people become, like magic horse people when they played a battle of the bands. And then fought demons. Like, they've seen this shit happen 3 times before. So everyone at this school is very chill about the existence of magic.
And the explanation of all of that, or kind of the exposition letting viewers know about all this stuff, is disposed with in creative ways on a couple of different occasions. Like, you mentioned the line about there being that other, the other Twilight Sparkle. That comes up when the character we only know is Stinko Man.
I swear I do not remember his name.
The guy with the blue hair who was into the formerly pony version of Twilight Sparkle.
Mm-hmm.
There's a part where there's kind of an awkward interaction between him and current Twilight Sparkle.
Yeah, and because if you don't remember, Stinko Man was romantically involved with, in the first film, the pony world's Twilight Sparkle, who came to the human world and became a human. And we had a lot of questions about that, about like why she was finding him attractive when he is a member of a different, like a completely different order of mammal. They were together. They at least had a mutual attraction and, like, sort of crushed on each other and, like, quasi-dated. But now there's someone who looks exactly like her and has her name, who's going to the school, but doesn't know him at all. Which is a very weird and very interesting situation.
She's not really interested in him.
No, she's not into him at all.
Because She spends this entire movie being into Timber Spruce.
Yes.
Even though it seems as though Timber Spruce has ulterior motives, might be the villain of the movie. There's a lot of misdirection trying to make him seem as though he's the villain of the movie here at the beginning.
Also might be 25 years old.
If not older.
Yeah.
That dude is designed such that he has a 30-year-old chin. That's all I'm going to say about that.
He is taller than Twilight Sparkle.
Once they're at the camp and they're doing activities, first of all, there's a mention made.
Real quick. The conversation that Stinko Man has with Sunset Shimmer is maybe the best part of the movie, because Sunset, who is like at the center of all this bullshit, just goes, hey, are you having a little trouble because you're in love with someone who looks exactly like her, but she's actually a pony princess from another dimension? And he's like, yeah, it's really difficult. Yeah, it's real. It's a bad situation.
There's another line where I believe it's Pinkie Pie talks about how they have fought 2 Satans and dealt with a band of sirens and basically the plots of the other movies, which is also well disposed of.
One of the kind of important things about this movie, and one of the reasons that Twilight is so afraid of acknowledging her powers, is that at the beginning they're like, thank God we're going to this camp in the forest, because we have had to, like, because it's implied to have only been like the same year. So all of this has happened in one school year. And they're like, okay, finally we're getting away from all this crazy magic that is really hard to deal with at home. We get to have a little break from all this.
Once they get to the camp, and we should note that this is a school trip to a summer camp. Like, it's a week-long trip to a camp,
which is
something that never happens.
No, I did that. I did that in middle school. We went to camp
for a week?
Yeah, for like a week. We had to cut our trip short because there was like a hurricane warning or something. But we did actually, like, it was a thing for gifted and talented students, which is, I was at one time when I was young and had potential. We went to a camp, and we would have stayed there for a week as a kind of a school-sponsored thing.
I remember going to, like, a thing for maybe a day. Like a day trip. I don't think I ever went to a camp for a week. Anyway,
no, this is a full on thing.
This is a whole school, which can fit in one bus, going to a camp for a week.
Because it's only like 20 students, and only 6 of them ever talk.
Yeah. So once they arrive there, the principal tells them every year, because it's an annual tradition, every year Canterlot High bestows the camp, Camp Everfree, with a gift. Their year, that principal's year, they gave him a sundial. So it's this class's responsibility to give them a gift, and they decide that they're going to give them a dock.
Also, a boat dock. By the way, also a very good joke, because Vice Principal Luna is still bitter that they gave a sundial, which is something that you can only use in the daytime. And she is, of course, the analogous to the pony who controls the moon. So
correct.
Very, very solid joke. Very solid pony joke.
They decide that they're going to build a boat dock for them. And then throughout the movie, there's a running gag about that boat dock being destroyed.
Yes.
In different ways. The boat dock gets destroyed the first time, as I mentioned earlier, when a boat accidentally runs into it. Then there's also an earthquake. Then there's a moment when all the ponies, or girls, kids, teens, are doing a rock climbing activity when these powers start manifesting themselves. Namely, Applejack notices that she has super strength and almost kills Rarity in the process. Because Rarity is climbing the wall. Applejack is supposed to be spotting for her, and she pulls on the rope too hard. And Rarity comes, like, falling to the ground, and Applejack just grabs it in the nick of time. As that's happening, there's also a scream that comes from the mess hall at the camp, where we discover that Pinkie Pie can make sprinkles explode.
Yes.
Like, she throws them up in the air and they explode.
She basically does Jubilee stuff, but only with confections, only with sprinkles and marshmallows.
Rarity gets mad at one point, and this, like, diamond-shaped force field comes out of her, and she sends Applejack into the lake with her force field thing. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Rainbow Dash discovers she has super speed, and Fluttershy finds out that she can communicate with animals.
Yes.
So that's everybody's superpower. And they all kind of manifest at once. Sunset Shimmer doesn't know what her superpower is yet. She hasn't experienced it yet. But Twilight is freaked out by all of this because she thinks she's responsible for it. So she goes running off into the woods and sings a song. Sunset finds her in the woods and, like, touches her on the arm and can see what Twilight is thinking. She is now a telepath of some kind. So that's her power. She realizes that Twilight is so scared of all of this. And she's like, hey, I turn into a Satan too. So I know what you're feeling. And I think that I can help you. But we got to help each other. And that makes Twilight feel okay about stuff.
So you want to get into the camp problems now?
One last thing about that scene. In that same scene, Twilight and Sunset see Timber out in the woods chopping down, you know, chopping, making firewood late at night, which is suspicious. And then as they see him walking away, there's like magic dust coming out of his pocket, which pegs him as the reason for why all this stuff is happening. They think that because he told this story about Gaia Everfree, that he has a plan to sabotage the camp so that this guy that they keep seeing around, whose name is Filthy Rich, who I kept wanting to call Rich Prick. We find out early in the movie that Filthy Rich is trying to buy the camp and make it into a spa resort.
Yes.
It seems as though Timber wants to sell and Gloriosa doesn't. As it turns out, that is not what's happening at all. And in fact, there's no real explanation given as to why Timber has that magic dust in his pocket.
No, that is
never... But it's there to make him see...
That is never mentioned.
Never addressed. Chris, you wanted to talk about the camp problem.
Yes. So there's a weird moment right at the start where Timber, I believe, doesn't want to bother with rebuilding the dock. He says something to the effect of, like, oh, you know, or, it's pointless. Like, oh, we shouldn't bother to do that. You should just enjoy the camp. And the implication there, and Gloriosa does, and the implication there is that the dock's just going to get bulldozed anyway. So I pegged this movie right then and there as a Scooby-Doo situation where all of these shenanigans are going to involve Timber wanting to sell the camp, Gloriosa not wanting to sell the camp, the girls are going to investigate and find out that, like, you know, someone's doing all this stuff to drive the campers away so that no one will miss the camp. Very Scooby-Doo style. I forgot that all of these movies involve someone turning into the devil at the end. So that's on me. I severely underestimated how good this movie is going to get by the end of it. Then that's on me. Well, and I wanted to publicly apologize for doubting the makers of My Little Pony Equestria Girls Legend of Everfree.
Well, the movie's also purposely swerving you.
Yeah, like, look, I got swerved. But, like, it's not... If I had any pattern recognition skills left from the first three movies, I would be like, oh, someone's going to turn into the devil by the end of this.
Right. Well, there's another part where Sunset overhears an argument between Timber and Gloriosa.
Mm-hmm.
Where Timber is saying, like, just abandon it. Just let it go.
Yes.
And the what it seemingly is that Timber is saying, like, just sell the camp to Filthy Rich and just let it go. But that's not what he's talking about at all. What he's talking about is the magic that Gloriosa has become addicted to.
Yes.
Because she has holed up in a cave. Twilight, Spike, and Sunset go into a cave and find Gloriosa in there with all these, like, magic... They're kind of gems, talismans, rocks that are the source of a bunch of magic. And her idea was that she was going to use this magic to, one, try to save Camp Everfree, and two, if she couldn't save it, make the last week of Camp Everfree the best week of camp that anyone has ever had.
Yeah, that's why she didn't want to rebuild the dock, because she doesn't want the kids doing free labor for the camp when they could be having fun.
I don't know why Timber was carrying around magic stuff in his pocket if he was like, don't do magic, Gloriosa.
Well, that seems like something that might have been cut out to get this movie down to that lean 73-minute running time.
Possibly.
God, what if... I wish all Movie Fighters movies could just be 73 minutes long. That would solve literally all of our problems.
So upon being confronted with this whole thing about her using magic, Gloriosa decides to turn into a forest demon, the real Gaia Everfree, trap Sunset, Twilight, and Spike inside the cave, then go outside, sing a song that is incredibly theatrical, like some Into the Woods shit, and cover the entire camp in roots and brambles. Like, make a dome over it with roots and brambles. The other ponies, the pony girls, who are not trapped in the cave.
No. More movies I've had to tell you those.
They decide that because they have these superpowers, it is up to them to stop Gloriosa from going mad with power.
But the only way they can really do that is if Twilight stops fighting against her own powers and conquers her fear of turning back into Midnight Sparkle.
They try in vain to make holes in the roots and brambles or bust through them somehow.
Yeah, Applejack's like throwing fucking rocks, but it just keeps growing back.
It just keeps growing back. So
have we talked about
Twilight?
Have we talked about Gloriosa turning into Guy Everfree and her redesign?
We haven't talked about her redesign. I said she's basically Gaia Everfree.
So when we see Gaia Everfree in the flashback, it's actually like a really good design, which makes me think that it's not a toy. Because like all the stuff that's not toys looks really good, and all the stuff that is toys is way too busy. But the Gaia Everfree design with like, you know, the kind of tree branch arms and the kind of weird like green flames around her is a really cool design. And then when Gloriosa turns into her like weird magical avatar of the green form, she also gets like a really cool design. I think she looks really awesome. She's basically like a final form Poison Ivy.
Yeah, she definitely has that kind of look about her. She looks like the protector of like a Zelda forest dungeon.
Yeah, no, that's exactly it. That's exactly it.
So Twilight finally has to like accept that her magic is not bad and that she should use it for good. And in doing so, she lifts the stone away 3 days later, and it moves from the opening to the tomb, and she is risen.
Right. We have seen into the tomb, and it is empty. Twilight Sparkle is risen indeed.
The Shroud of Twilight is proof.
I was drinking, you asshole.
Twilight and Sunset make their way back out. They see everything that's happening. And Twilight then uses her friendship magic because everybody's being attacked. Rarity is using her force fields to try to keep the roots from engulfing everybody because Gloriosa has gone extra mad with power at this point. And the roots are about to destroy the force field.
Yeah, and Twilight does that thing that characters always do in like comics and Power Rangers and whatever, where they just immediately work through a very traumatic and reality-based fear. And she goes like, I'm no longer afraid of the magic inside me because the magic inside me is friendship, which is the dumbest thing in the world, and I fucking love it.
Then all of the gemstones.
Yes, yes, yes.
That Gloriosa is wearing around her neck because they sort of form themselves into a necklace around her neck at one point. They come off and they are distributed to all of the different Equestria girls in color-coded fashion.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And once they receive those gems, they become transformed in a Sailor Moon-style transformation sequence.
Yes.
Into, like, they're not exactly superhero costumes, but they get costumes.
They get costumes, and they're not superhero costumes, and they're not, like, Sailor Scout costumes. They're, like, they're My Little Pony Equestria Girls doll costumes is what
okay.
they are.
Okay.
But it's
here's the
very
deal.
Good.
In the previous movies,
uh-huh.
what the Equestria Girls were capable of doing was, quote-unquote, ponying up.
Which I
where they would grow tails.
I hate that.
They would grow tails and horse ears and have kind of powers that way. This is a huge step up from ponying up.
Yeah. No, this is like, I mean, they're not Sailor Scout costumes, but they might as well be. And they have full-on transformation sequences. They're short. They're not like long. They're not like... Like, there's a Scooby-Doo movie with Kiss in it where Kiss goes through, like, literal shot-for-shot recreations of Sailor Scout transformations, which is amazing. It was, like, the best thing that's ever happened involving the Knights in Satan's service. I would bet cash money right now that there's an extended version of this transformation sequence that the animators did that is much more like Sailor Moon.
And once they transform, they don't even have to do anything. The transformation itself shoots a beam of light out into the world and gets rid of all the brambles and thorns that are covering the camp and changes Gloriosa back to her regular self.
Mm-hmm.
And another sign that magic is straight up drugs in these movies is Gloriosa, like everybody else who was turned into a Satan, is like laying on the ground going, what happened? What did I do? She blacked out. She was tripping balls. And then when she became herself again, she didn't know what she did. There is still the issue, however, at this point, of Filthy Rich trying to buy the camp.
Yeah, which is, this is another weird thing that we talked about, because like they talk about how this camp has been in their family for multiple like it was founded by their grandparents. Their grandparents owned it. But now they have this guy who's foreclosing. And, you know, theoretically, like, they could have mortgaged the camp and then defaulted on the payments. But it seems, like, successful. It's very weird. Like, it's very, like, don't think about these adult concerns that these horse people have.
It's not just that Filthy Rich wants to buy the camp. They are indebted to him somehow. Mm-hmm. Somehow he has become an investor in the camp. Or he has bailed them out in one way or another. Like, they've had to refinance the camp when they were in financial trouble at some point. And now they are underwater to Filthy Rich. So it's not even really that he just wants to buy it. It's that if they don't come up with a certain amount of money by a certain amount of time, he just owns it.
Yeah.
Like, it is transferred over to him.
And he's just going to bulldoze all these yurts that they've been staying in.
That's right. Like, maybe at some point when Gloriosa and Timber's parents died, the financials of the camp really went to shit. I don't know. There's some real involved financial storytelling going on here.
Well, I think what's very clear at this point is that probably Timber and Gloriosa's parents were murdered by the loan sharks they were indebted to.
Okay, yeah.
I think we can read between the lines and assume that one.
The only way that anybody can decide to save the camp is the only logical thing.
Yeah, of course. What else are they going to do?
Put on a show.
Going to put on a show.
They make up invitations to every single person who ever attended the camp before. Rainbow Dash hand delivers them.
Yeah, so we
because
see,
apparently the world of Equestria Girls has no postal service.
Well, the thing is, they have to have this show like the next day. Like, they have to have it tomorrow night. And when they start stuffing envelopes, I'm like, okay, how's this gonna work? But no, then Rainbow Dash just delivers all the mail to a village that is certainly not the town we've seen. It's like a weird, it looks like Privet Drive from Harry Potter.
I think it's just like a rich subdivision in the town we've seen, but I'm not sure. Either way, they invite all these people. It doesn't really seem like any of them show up. We don't really see those characters at the show.
1.5 new adult characters.
But it's mostly just the people who are already at the camp, because I guess they didn't want to design any new characters. At this show, the Equestria Girls play a song, and they manage to raise enough money to save the camp. Filthy Rich is disposed of just because Gloriosa says, hey, we raised enough money, and he just walks out the door. That is the end of him. Then we get the kicker about where the magic in the world of Equestria Girls comes from. Then, post-credits, there's one more little gag about destroying the dock after they think that it's finished. Chris, what are the high points of My Little Pony, Equestria Girls, Legend of Everest?
Well, there's a lot to love, Matt. There's, first of all, it's 73 minutes long.
Uh-huh, yeah,
which, which, in turn, it's lean. Like, there's like, three musical numbers, but they're, like, there's not a lot of filler going on. Everything kind of advances the plot, which is refreshing and nice.
There are some dangling plot threads that aren't explained that seem to have been cut out. Like, the explanations for them seem to have been cut out, but I'll take that over the movie being too long.
Anytime. I mean, I think what's supposed to be happening with Timber and his pockets full of glitter dust is that he's trying to cover for Gloriosa by making it seem like it's Gaia Everfree and not just that she has gone, like, mad with magical power. because she does not leave that trail of glitter dust when she's using her powers. I like that this movie follows logically from the three before it. At one point, they're like, yeah, our band can play. It is established that they have a band. Twilight's worried about turning back into a demon, and she is comforted by someone who has also turned into a demon. Existing relationships are used and reinforced. The stuff with Stinko Man.
As much as I don't think I would ever say this, the fact that everyone is so traumatized by everything that has happened before makes sense and works in this movie.
The plot is fun. Because it does set itself up as exactly a Scooby-Doo episode, and then reminds you, oh no, this is an Equestrian Girls thing. There's gonna be a demon. Like, someone's gonna, like, Hulk out into a demon. Also, there's a Sailor Scout transformation sequence, which is fantastic.
Yeah, the Sailor Scout current transformation sequence, like, all the stuff with magic, and these versions of the My Little Pony characters using magic in their human form. I think this is the first movie to get that right.
Yes, yes.
By more or less turning them into superheroes.
Twilight being menaced by her own evil self. Like, even her song, which has the line, "I don't want my friends to see the midnight in me," is like an interesting take on that, because it is like, it is a recognition that she has this potential to be a bad person that is, you know, within us all. And I think, like, that's, like, a really, like, kind of smart treatment of something that doesn't just go away when her friends are like, oh, no, that's not a possibility. Like, you're never going to do that again. It's just like, yeah, you did that, but, you know, we're friends now, and we're going to help each other. Like, that's actually a really nice thing.
Yeah, it gets into some emotional depth that you might not expect from this movie for babies.
Yes.
All right, Chris, let's talk about the low points of Legend of Everfree. My number one low point is, despite this being the best Equestria Girls movie, I think it has the worst music.
It's all very 90s Broadway.
Except for the opening credits music, which is straight up an Imagine Dragons song with, Imagine Dragons song.
That one's genuinely terrible.
But it sounds like an Imagine Dragons song, down to the "Haze, hey, hey," like, that's throughout the song. That song is bad. The rest of it is more just kind of like 90s Broadway, but none of it is particularly memorable. It's full of puns.
Oh yeah, the entire last Gloriosa's last musical number is there. We're going to do this forever free. Which they go to a lot in that song.
It's in the next song, too. It's in the Rain Boom song, too. Those puns are not good. The music leaves something to be desired, I have to say.
Let's talk about Timber.
Oh, Timber's weird age thing?
So Twilight has a crush on Timber. Understandable. He's a handsome older camp counselor. Timber is also very romantically interested in Twilight, and, I mean, there's definitely an implied makeout at the end, right? Like, she comes out of the cave blushing, like, you know, and, like, looking over her shoulder as they're holding hands, and then he goes back inside, and she goes and talks to Sunset, who is, you know, holding her shoes and drinking from a solo cup. And again, he has a job? It's very, I mean, like, when that happened, I was like, oh, wow, this is a lot like Sailor Moon. Like, this is very Sailor Moon.
He could conceivably be 18 or 19, but he comes off as much older.
I mean, we don't know if this is, like, summer vacation, and he's, like, 17. But there's also, this is a weird thing that we've been getting into for the entirety of this movie series, which is that Pony Twilight is an adult. She has a job. She has graduated from school, and then she comes to a world where she is a teenager for a little bit, and, like, kinda sorta dates a teenager. Like, it's real weird, and it's, like, a lot of stuff that we're just not supposed to think about.
Final thoughts on My Little Pony, Equestria Girls, Legend of Everfree.
Absolutely my favorite of these four movies, by far.
Do you think that someone who has not seen the previous three movies could enjoy this one? Because there is so much you have to know to understand anything that's happening in
this? That's an excellent question, Matt. That's a very good question. No, I don't. Because here's the thing at this point. There's four fucking movies. Like,
yeah.
It's a series, you know? That's like, you know, could you understand Captain America Civil War without seeing the movies that came before it? Without seeing Avengers and Winter Soldier and First Avenger? Like, no, you couldn't. It's continuity. It all follows. Like, this one you're just going to be real damn confused about because there's a weird...
Because, like, the first thing you see is Twilight Sparkle thinking about the Satan that she was at one point.
Mm-hmm.
And if you haven't seen the previous movie, you're going to be like, what?
Yes. No, I don't think you get to jump on here. But I think also, like, this thing was released to Netflix, and, like, all the other ones are on Netflix. They're not asking you to jump on with the new season of Gilmore Girls either, you know?
But, okay, so here, this leads to my question.
Yes.
Since we don't think that you can just watch this movie standalone.
Right.
Is it worth getting to this one to watch the previous three?
At any point in the previous three Equestria Girl movies, were you more bored than perplexed?
Yes.
Rainbow Rocks
was boring.
I would say watch the first one, which is the most confusing. Skip Rainbow Rocks, then watch Friendship Games, then okay, I'll tell you what this is. This is like fucking Casino Royale and Quantum of Solace, where it doesn't work on its own, but if you watch it back to back, like watch Friendship Games and then immediately watch Legend of Everfree, as though it takes place the next day. And then I think you'll get something out of it.
All right, I think we've worked out a system. If you're willing to devote, I don't know, 4 hours to watching some Equestria Girls movies, it is worth watching Legend of Everfree.
No, I mean, the answer is no one should actually sit down to watch these without a child. But if you do, because look, how many times did I watch Follow That Bird when I was three, you know?
Oh, sure. I watched a lot of Follow That Bird as well.
You're going to be stuck watching Equestria Girls because you have a child who wants to watch Equestria Girls. You might as well, like, put this one on and have some fun with it.
All right. That's going to do it for this episode of Movie Fighters. Thanks for listening. If you would like to help us do monthly snack situation specials on this Movie Fighters feed, consider going to patreon.com/warrocketajax, the name of our other podcast, and kicking in a few dollars over there. Because once we reach the $1,500 level, we will start doing monthly snack situation specials. We have bags of snacks from Beijing that we're saving for the first of those specials. So if that sounds like a cool thing that you would like to hear, then head over there and do that. Our music is by Michael Kill. Our website was designed by Sean Baugus. Go leave us a review on iTunes if you feel like doing that. We would appreciate it. We'll be back in December with something holiday related.
Will it be as thrillingly terrible as last year's?
Only time will tell. Until then, everybody.
This has been a Clytus Media production.